Hey, we are live, pal. As you can tell, that is not Andrew Zarian there. That is the boss, Kyle Ross. Kyle, what's going on?
First time, long time, Garrett. Thanks for having me on, man.
Okay, so I'll explain to the people who are watching, because I think, you know, they were expecting to see Andrew. Andrew had a family thing that happened while we were actually in Las Vegas. So he had to go home a little early. I think everything is going okay. I'm sure he'll be back next week to tell people what's going on with his situation. Instead of going dark, I thought about, you know, maybe we have to go dark this week. I thought, you know, there's some people out there who were in Las Vegas with me, Kyle being one of them. Kyle does a podcast for Top Rope Nation with Ryan Droste and others. And so that's how I know Kyle. And so we're just going to talk about, you know, the weekend that we were both in Vegas, had a great time. Show was really good, though. We'll talk about the length. There's a lot of people on this length thing, and I want to get your take on it. But I sort of figured, like, let's just start from the beginning of the week and just kind of get our way through. Then we'll get to the show and we'll just catch everybody up on, you know, what was going on, because it was also the Figure Four convention. We're back after a several year absence because of the pandemic. And so you guys got to see a little bit of that being out there. You got to sit with us at Double or Nothing. So I'm sure you met a lot of F4W people as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, let's just attack it that way. And I will say, for the people who are watching on YouTube, you know, I'll be following the chat. So if you have any questions or if you have any comments, you want to throw them up, and, you know, I'll try and throw them up and we'll talk about it. But so also the look, obviously, we're down a producer. Our great producer John, he got injured in Vegas. He was on a hike, and I think he may have turned an ankle or something. So he was getting that checked out earlier today. I told them, I'll go solo. Well, so you can see the show looks a little bit different here. This is what I use is StreamYard, which is definitely, like, technologically a degradation of what producer John uses, which is, like, near professional quality of software. So that looks a little different. Bear with us. We'll be back to normal stuff next week and the show that you're used to. Okay, so let's talk about this. So I show up on Friday. I did not plan it this way, but I am traveling with Dave Meltzer, his significant other. Like, he just showed, like, we didn't plan it because I didn't want to wait for him to figure out his getting the Observer up and when he could sort of fly out the next day. But, you know, we live in the same area, so it just happened that we were on the same flight. And my buddy Jeremy Finestone, who was with me pretty much all weekend, he and I kind of booked our trips and such together. And, you know, we get into town, and because Rampage is so, it has to be so early because of the hockey playoffs. So it's not like you can just kind of, you know, we're going to get into town, we're going to get our room, we're going to relax, kick back. Nope. It was like, get into town, get to the rooms, get to the hotels, and then get to food, and then boom, right at the building. Did you by chance catch any of Rampage?
No, my arrival was the complete opposite. I showed up Saturday morning, had plenty of time to unwind, checked into the room early, napped for 3 hours, was ready to go Saturday night. We hit a distillery. And then came and met you guys at the party.
So Rampage is an interesting show because it is only 1 hour. So when you're running a live taping, you have to kind of put stuff before it and you have to kind of put stuff after it. Because what fan is going to go, 1 hour of live wrestling, here's my $100, right? And so we kind of knew what was coming. We're going to get some dark stuff in the beginning. We're going to get some dark stuff at the end. But I was just focused on the 1 hour Rampage, because that sprint, that go home Rampage, they're packing that thing. And that was a really fun show. Like, when the Hardys came out, or as the Young Bucks came out dressed as the Hardys, the fans went nuts. Like, it was, they went crazy. You got to see a great Bryan Danielson match against Matt Sydal. And it's funny because Matt Sydal and Brian Danielson have been to the F4W convention before. This is going back 10 years, probably, before both were in WWE, or maybe Brian had just barely got there. I don't exactly remember. But because, you know, they know people who we know, they've been at the convention prior. So it's kind of fun to see them both facing each other, knowing, like, oh, we've met those guys before, you know, hanging out at the convention. They had a great match. So we get to the end, which is Ruby Soho and Chris Statlander. They're having a pretty good match, but then Chris Statlander takes it up another level, and the fans just get behind her like nobody's business. It's been rare to watch a match to understand where Chris Statlander is in the sort of the, you know, where she is in the rankings of contenders. And for her to come back and for the crowd to just go like, you know what? Halfway through this match, we're just giant Chris Statlander fans. It was kind of crazy. So they're having this match. I'm pretty sure Ruby Soho is going to win. She gets booed out of the building after she wins the match, does a promo trying to, you know, tell the fans, hey, I love Chris. We're friends. Like, you know, best person won or whatever. They boo her even louder. And I was talking to Dave after, Dave and Brian. And Dave said, I would have called an audible. I was like, oh, gosh, it's a smart call to call an audible. But then is that match better or worse against Britt Baker, knowing Britt Baker's going to win the whole thing anyways?
When was the last time that you can remember someone called an audible in a situation like that? Because you hear that sometimes, right? Yeah. Like, I think the classic one, as I heard you say that word, was Kofi and Bryan in the Chamber. What was that? 3 years ago now?
Well, no, 18.
Yeah. Right before they did the match at WrestleMania. And I can't think of the last time that, like, I feel today there's just no way you're going to ever have that, even if it does make sense.
Well, I mean, and think about it. You know, Tony's booking this long show for the next day. He's got it all mapped out. For him to even think about changing his plan, that we've got the Ruby Soho Rancid entrance the next day, that takes Ruby off the card completely. Maybe she does a run-in, but, like, you know, there's a whole piece of business that you have to change in order for that to happen.
And she's going to be pissed off too.
Yeah.
Let's not bury the lead. She's going to be very mad. Oh yeah. I've decided you're not getting over in this match. So, you know, Rancid playing you down to the ring, that's not going to happen.
So then after the show, I think we stayed for, there was a Darby Allin squash. That was fun. Then there was a House of Black thing that we stayed for. And then we bounced out. We're like, oh, let's go, you know, let's go get a drink. We're going to go back and grab dinner and hang out. Because part of this, you know, part of this is, it's not only just the wrestling stuff. It's also you want to see people at the convention who you haven't seen in years. So we wanted to keep some time available, too. So right, I don't remember exactly when we left, but as we're walking out the building, I think there's a 6-woman tag. It's like Nyla Rose and Diamante and some other folks. I think maybe Riho may have been in it. And I kind of felt bad, you know, leaving. I was like, I want to support some of these folks. And, you know, a lot of people are kind of leaving because it's AEW Dark, right? So it looks kind of disrespectful. But I felt a little bit better when walking out in front of us, none other than Matt Jackson and Brandon Cutler. They were like, we're out. We're going to get dinner. Uh-oh. And I was like, okay, well, I don't feel as disrespectful then if those guys who were on the show decided to leave before it was over as well.
Yeah, and an EVP. I mean, if he's not going to stay, then why should you? Getting back to the the box and the way they spoofed the Hardys, I thought it was great the way they parodied, obviously, Matt's infamous tumble over the ropes years ago. That's a good attention to detail. I like that. You know, some people are like, who remembers that?
Well, yeah.
It doesn't take anything away from the program,
right,
if you
right,
don't.
Right.
And all you have to do is go on social media in 5 minutes and you're going to be reminded what they were doing. I think it's cool. Yeah. I think it's cool when wrestlers remember that. So that, bravo to them.
So then, you know, like I said, solid show, but I was pretty toast. I was kind of tired that, you know, getting in, like, you know, the previous conventions, nobody's going to bed before 4 o'clock in the morning. That's just kind of the rule, the unwritten rule of the F4W convention. Like, you know, the unwritten rules in baseball where you can't, can't try and score if you're up 8 runs. The unwritten rules of the F4W convention is nobody goes to bed. Like, you're just hanging out throughout all the night. But it got to about 10 o'clock, and I was like, God, I'm so tired. It was also probably the fact that the next day was my birthday, so I'm just getting old at the same time. It's getting
Happy birthday,
older.
By the way.
Thank you. So the next day was the craziest, one of the craziest days of me doing this stuff with wrestling, with podcasts, with, you know, with Big Dave. So that whole day, that was the day that the MJF stuff came out. So you see the information about MJF no showing the AEW fan fest. And so that's kind of hovering out there. Andrew Zarian and I, we had planned to do a couple of podcasts from the suite, the Cosmo suite. And so there was a whole thing of getting equipment, you know, setting up sort of a studio-like atmosphere in the suite. You guys saw it after we were done. You guys came through. Mm-hmm. And so Andrew and I were kind of rushed that day. Like, oh, we're going to set this thing up. We're going to set this show up. Set these two shows up. And so, you know, we're hearing all this stuff at the FanFest. There was the Dave and Brian Q&A that morning as well. So we were out, like, pretty early to go help with that. And this is when Andrew sort of got the news that he was going to have to bail out early. So, you know, there was like, oh, you know, this day is already starting kind of crazy. So, you know, it's Vegas when it's 10:30 a.m. and we're at the Silver Nugget for Dave and Brian's Q&A. And we both looked at each other and we're like, you got to get a drink. And, you know, if you were to do that. Yeah. In your own home or in your own city, like, there's something that tells you 10:30 is kind of early for a drink and it's going to kind of screw up the rest of my day. No, of course, we don't want to have a drink at 10:30. But when you're in Vegas, you don't have that thing that tells you to know the bar is open at 10:30 a.m. Like, okay, of course, it's fine. So we both get a drink. I could tell, you know, he's a little he's not frustrated, but he's like, oh, just another thing that we have to do. And so then we both have the drink. We do the Q&A with Dave and Brian. Denise Salcedo does a fantastic intro of Brian and Dave. They come into the ring and they do the Q&A, and it's really fun. I usually try and help out so that they don't have to, like, hold the mic and stuff. And so after we get out of the Q&A, then that's when all the MJF stuff starts to go on. So also at the same time, I'm getting texts from Dave going like, hey, it's kind of possible for us to do an interview with Tony Khan. Just kind of be ready and be aware. And I was like, OK, I was an idiot because I forgot my computer at home. Like, I packed everything and then I forgot one of the most important things, which was my computer. But I was like, you know what? We have this great, we're building out this really cool studio in the Cosmo suite. Like, we'll be fine. And then so I get another text from Dave and he's like, we might be able to do it. Just be ready. And I'm like, okay, well, can we get Tony to come to the suite? And I think that sort of stopped Dave a little bit. And I think Dave wanted to do, like, this, you know, old school tape recorder, put the mic in it, you know, and we have this, like, pretty elaborate setup with video, great sounding audio. And, you know, Dave wanted to do the old beat writer thing with the microphone. And I was like, no, we got to get him in the studio because we could put it on video. We'll put it on the YouTube page. We'll monetize the video. Like, that's how I'm thinking, right? And he's just like old school, you know, media guy, reporter with, you know.
Let's hear him chat.
Yeah. So anyway, because of the ups and downs of that night, Tony was available. Then he wasn't available. Then he was available. And I'm sure it had everything to do with the MJF thing, with putting the show together, if there was any changes. So I kind of felt like, you know, even though there was a small opportunity around, you know, 8 p.m. mid to 10 p.m., it's like, oh, we may do it. And I was like, Tony's way too busy now. And he's losing hours before this next pay-per-view. But we all got to hang out at the suite party, right?
Yep.
You guys came through. And I'll let you tell the story, but you are a big Meltzer history guy. Like, you like to read a lot of the back issues. You do. You love doing podcasts on the history of wrestling. Mm-hmm. And so you were, I'd asked you when you got there, I was like, hey, have you ever met Dave before? And you were like, no. Because you were asking me who would be a good person to talk about this Pat Patterson and Sergeant Slaughter boot camp match, because you wanted to do a show on it. I was like, the guy's right there. He's the only guy in this room who would probably be the guy to do it. And you're like, no. And so I said, well, you know, you should meet him. And as we're talking about this, Dave just walks right over to us. So yes. I'll let you kind of take it from there, from your perspective.
Well, I couldn't have imagined meeting Dave probably any other way than him just walking over in a huff, having no clue who I am. I'm just standing there talking to you, and Ryan's there, and Justin's there, my co-host on Top Rope Nation. And he just is spilling the beans and talking about what he knows about MJF. And I'm like, or what he thought he knew, or what was going on. Yeah. And I'm like, hi, by the way. And then you handle the intro. I'm like, it's lovely to know that. That's great. I couldn't ask for that any better. Cause I was, you know, we were at a distillery. We were out. We were doing some gambling too before we stopped by the suite. And we're all talking about this. Like, what's going on? What's going on? And yeah, sure enough, I walk in, and you know, who better to find out what's going on than just Dave Meltzer just walking right up to us at the party and saying, this is what I think is going on.
Yeah, it was so funny, because it was almost like we're talking about, I'm thinking about, okay, I'm going to get you an introduction at some point. Mm-hmm. And then he just comes over like it's, and this is what happened. Like, this is kind of, this is just how he is, you know. Yeah. He gets information, and he, you know, the people that he works with, because he loves talking shop. That is his ultimate favorite thing to do, is to talk shop. And you know, he is in this stuff 24/7. So that it didn't surprise me. But as it was happening, I realized with you guys that this wasn't like a common thing. And I was like, oh, yeah, they're sort of seeing Dave work in real time. Like, this is how Dave, you know, this is his sort of everyday life, is just information, talking to people, you know, what's new. Let's think about how, you know, that whole thing. So I loved that you guys got to see him sort of doing his Dave thing in real time.
Yeah, I would have loved it. I don't know. Scale of 1 to 10, how nervous were you that I was just going to start asking completely random questions, like nothing MJF related, just some random question from like 2004 or 2005? Be like, hey, what do you remember about this?
Because so it's kind of how I met him.
Oh, really?
Well, not met. So I told him the last time I talked to him, I think it was on the last We're Live Pal that we did last week before we all went out to Vegas. So I had known him. My best friend would worked at the gym that Dave used to train at. So he would always just tell me, oh yeah, you know, I ran into Dave today and asked him some question about Triple H or something. And
imagine me asking Dave a question about Triple H.
And so then it got to the point where he was like, hey, My friend had gotten to know one of Dave's good friends, and he was like, hey, do you want to go watch UFC at Dave's house? I was like, yes, there's nothing more that I want to do. Mm-hmm. And so unfortunately, we couldn't do it. We couldn't make it happen. And then it would have been maybe a couple years later that I met him in person at an event. And then when these conventions started happening, I would run into him and just say hi. And, you know, I do the thing, you know, asking him a question. And, you know, he's always been very, very fun in that way, because like I said, he loves this stuff. But it was at a convention where he came in the room and he saw me, and he didn't recognize anybody else, so he just came and sat next to me, and we just talked forever. And that was really the first time that I got to really know him. And I did the same thing, just started any possible question that I ever had in the back of my mind that I wanted answered about wrestling, I just spewed it out. And he's always been cool about doing that. So folks who, you know, may meet him in person, as long as he's like not, you know, eating or something, like I would just say go for it. Like, he really loves talking about this stuff.
Well, I would have known that him and Vince had something in common.
Okay, so at the party, that was your opportunity to meet a lot of people. Did you guys have a good time?
Oh yeah, it was a great time. And I was worried, because kind of to your point about Friday, it was an early start. I didn't fly out of here, or I mean, I flew out of here like super early, like 7 a.m.
Yeah.
Got there Vegas time, like 10:30. So it was a long day, and we'd been out. We were having a good time. We didn't stop by your guys' place till what, like 10:30? But I got a real second win, man. It was a great time.
Yeah.
It was so, cool to meet everyone.
The suite party was great. A lot of the OGs from the F4W convention of yesteryear were there, so it was great to catch up. But at some point, I was like, okay, I'm out. We're done. This day was kind of crazy, and we got to get ready for the pay-per-view. So the next morning, all the hubbub was, is MJF going to show up at this show? The night before, it was like, I think Sean Ross Sapp had said, you know, he's been booked on this flight. Dave and Brian said, doesn't look like the flight is like, so there was some confusion, and I trust that Sean did his due diligence. So whatever that story is, I'm sure we'll find out exactly what that story was. But the next day, it was just all about, is this guy going to show up at this pay-per-view? What were your thoughts about this whole thing? Because you are a fan from a long time ago, and you understand, you're a historian. It is a rare occasion in this day and age that we know the current wrestling where a wrestler's like, outside of maybe like Hulk Hogan or Brock Lesnar or The Rock, where they're just like, you know what? I have leverage here. I'm going to see how I can use it.
Well, Naomi and Sasha, though. It's kind of weird.
Well, yeah, it literally just happened before. No,
but to your point, it's crazy that this has now happened twice, two different promotions in a matter of weeks, when you're right, before that, well, who knows when like other than Brock Lesnar, when this would have happened. So when I heard this, my mind immediately defaulted to Wardlow, actually.
Right.
Because it's like they've told this great story on television, and fair or unfair, when these stories come about, I look at this, some people may raise their eyebrow here, kind of selfishly as a fan, like, well, what am I eyed
right
if this guy does it? Like with Sasha and Naomi, I was, I don't want to say more sympathetic, but maybe I was, because I didn't think I was being denied anything by what they were refusing to do. This would have been very bad.
Yeah.
Like this was the number two promoted match on the card, and to lose it would have been catastrophic for Tony Khan and AEW. Thankfully they didn't. I kept saying throughout the day, there's no way he's going to no show, because I just didn't know what kind of leverage that would gain him, because it would be an atrocious precedent to set if you're Tony Khan. Oh, okay, you're unhappy. Well, fine. You just no show my pay-per-view. You can leave and go work for Vince. I mean, that'd just be horrible.
Yeah.
If he would have done that. So I was like, he's got to show up at the very, I mean, I don't know how irreparable the situation is. I understand they're meeting today. It was reported by you guys. I know that Tony and MJF are still in Vegas talking. But, you know, I thought at the very least it might be like a Jeff Jarrett situation if the deal is irreparable, like where, you know, hey, let's get him in here. Let's just pay him money to do a job and then we'll move on. I don't think that's what happened necessarily.
That was that one was like a stick up. That was like,
yeah,
pay me my 1.5 or I'm walking.
Well, yeah, it was also very different because Jeff, he didn't have to. Here, you've got a guy who's under a contract for 18 more months. So it's not an apples-to-apples situation.
Nice clerical error there, WWE.
Yeah, whoops. Yeah, I know. And, yeah, then Jeff loves to needle Jim Ross about that, I know.
And that also what was a big part of Jeff not sort of being welcomed back until, you know, gosh, it was like 20 years later when they finally welcomed him back, or maybe a little bit less.
And look at him now. He's running the house shows, or pardon me, live events.
Live events.
Yeah.
Jeff Jarrett. Ain't he great?
Yeah.
Okay, so
to be a fall guy, yes.
Okay, so now we're all sort of headed to the building. What were your impressions of the T-Mobile?
Look, man, I am the last guy to complain about drink prices, but how these people look at themselves in the mirror when they're going to ask people to pay $23 for a Jack and Coke is just beyond description. I was like, man, I get it. You know, it's a very nice state-of-the-art arena. Blows away Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse here in Cleveland. But come on, man, $23. I mean, no, it didn't stop me. I certainly didn't. I'm not a man of principle. I was like, yeah, whatever. I guess it sucks, but we're going to keep doing it. And it was great, too, based on the seats we had, where we could we had our own kind of little bar. So that was nice. So at least you didn't have to like wait in line too.
Yeah. So we were in the Bud Light. What was it called? The Bud Light
Lounge.
The Bud Light Lounge, which plays into a part of our story here that we'll get to in a second.
Yeah. But I'll just say this: I know this is always a talking point, it seems, with these AEW shows. Or maybe it was just the last one I was at, All Out in Chicago, where there's like just such a long line to get in. Just a pro tip when they come back to Vegas next year. When you walk up to the arena, just keep walking right. All everyone was, because I saw the people, oh my God, this line's so long to get in. And I panicked when I saw, I think it was Denise posted something on Twitter. I was like, guys, we got to get over there. This line's horrible.
Yeah, yeah.
And
we were stuck in that line. We did not know this tip. I wish I would have had this tip.
I know. And I'm like, there is no way that this line can be so long. I was like, I've been to many events before at many arenas. I find it very hard to believe that this one is just that hard to get in. I'm like, just give me a second, guys. And I just kept walking right around the building. And I was like, guys, there's no line in the furthest line at all. I'm like, just, and I'm just like waving feverishly like a madman. We just walked. We didn't wait more than 5 minutes to get in the building.
It's awesome. Yeah, we waited like a half an hour.
Sorry.
We waited half an hour. Thankfully, it wasn't as hot as it could have been because we would have been roasting out there.
It was a mild Vegas weekend, I thought, for the most part. Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing, you know, no 105, you know, once you wake up kind of night. But I liked the building as well. I thought the building was really cool. And my initial thought was, oh my gosh, this is WrestleMania 32 all over again, which was the first time that they ran Dallas. But what happened in Dallas, I think, is that they couldn't get the doors open. There was something going on with the electronics. And so we're all just waiting. And most of us missed whatever the couple pre-show matches were, like big whoop, who cares? But I think it was exactly what you said, which everybody sort of figured that these were the entrances, and they just piled in and just created a line. And when people see lines, they go, let's get in this line.
Well, it was kind of weird, the setup. It did just sort of funnel to the one area. And I only walked like halfway around the building to find where there was no line. I don't know if you could get in on the other side or whatnot. I imagine you can. That'd be odd if you couldn't. But it just kind of funneled everyone the one way.
So
it's funny you talk about WrestleMania 32, because I know we're going to talk about the length of the show. And I know WrestleMania 32, I think, is actually still going on right now.
We'll talk about that. There was a lot of hubbub about how long a wrestling show should be. And I guess in a sense, if you were watching from your house, because you're on the East Coast, you would have been watching until after midnight on a Sunday night.
Yeah. And do you know what's funny? And I know you've been to both of these events, and you didn't go to Full Gear or Revolution, did you?
No.
Okay. Well, all right. So I was at All Out, and I was obviously there this weekend. I didn't feel sitting in the building that they either show was long.
No.
Whereas the two that I watched on my couch in the basement, I was like getting gassed by the end of the show, like looking at my watch, like, come on, I got stuff to do. And that's interesting because length, as you said, was a big talking point. I think for the people in the building, all right, there was a lull in the middle of the show, but everyone was up by the end. Right. I mean, it was like kind of a fever pitch for the main event, which is what you want. That's not always the case for these AEW pay-per-views.
Yes. Okay. So getting building, the show starts, and I'll read through some of these matches because I do want your thoughts on some of these matches. The opener in the buy-in is the Hookhausen match, which was sort of perfect for what it was. What do you think about Hook? You've seen a lot of young rookies who kind of, maybe they're like the hot rookie coming in, and a lot have fizzled. Some have actually, been really great. What do you think about Hook?
Okay. His debut couldn't have gone any better, but anyone with kind of half a brain knew, all right, you can't just push him to the moon.
Yeah.
Now he's way, way too young. So having him simmer on the back burner is perfect. Actually, what they're doing with him, I think, is fine. This was a perfect buy-in match.
This is kind of the reverse of how The Rock came in, where he got pushed to the moon immediately, and the fans turned on him for it. The fans, I don't imagine they're turning on Hook anytime soon.
No, because they're keeping it simple.
Yeah.
They're not going, so much about wrestling, the key is with these individual performers, you don't want to push someone, like you mentioned with The Rock, above where the fans see them. And I think for most people, or not most, but at least a lot of the AEW fan base, they look at Hook and say, oh, I'd like to see this guy higher. But it's just not the time now. He just doesn't have enough experience.
Right.
He's in the right spot.
All right. So pull up my F4W report here. Who wrote this F4W? Parker Klein. Parker Klein's F4W report on the pay-per-view. So the first match is the MJF match. And I'm really interested on what you thought, because a lot of people whose opinions I think matter, who I value, they thought this match would have been similar to how it would have gone, even if there was no issue here with MJF. What did you think about that?
Yeah, I think if this was just the end of a feud, or if it was writing MJ off of TV for a while or permanently, it was perfect. This is what you do. I mean, it made Wardlow look like a huge star. And you know, MJF, he was taking those power bombs pretty ugly. I thought, man, I don't know.
One of them was like on the butt bone or something.
Yeah, I was like, oh, God. I was looking at that. I was like, maybe he is taking a few months off at least. But yeah, I thought it was absolutely perfect, no matter what the actual dynamic is, and we don't know. But it was reported, you know, just getting back to the MJF discussion that dominated Sunday in our neck of the woods. It was reported, what, like a half hour before showtime, maybe even an hour, that this was going on first, and it was always supposed to go on first. So
that's what they said.
Yeah, after all that time, to your point, it went probably exactly how it was advertised to be. This is exactly how, like, if MJF was not upset with anything, this is probably how you do the match anyway.
So I was of the opinion. Now, I don't remember what show it was on. I'm really overexposed on this network. Mm-hmm. I'm with Dave on Friday, and then I do this show with Andrew, and then I do my show on Wednesday night with John LaRocca. So I don't remember which place I said, but may have been all three for all I know. But I said, I love this storyline so much that the match in of itself is sort of secondary to me. I was just more interested to see where they go, because the match is sort of a means to an end. And, you know, I didn't think it was going to be a five-star classic in any way, because it's so much part of a storyline. I was just so intrigued where the storyline is going. So that being said, the one thing I wanted so badly for MJF to get a near fall and for the crowd to gasp that there's the small chance that Wardlow could lose this match. And then I would have been fine with the rest of what they did, but I sort of feel like I wanted that moment and I didn't get it.
Yeah, and it was funny, the one near fall that we did get and the crowd popped big was Wardlow putting his foot on MJF after, what, like four power bombs?
Yeah.
And then being like, no, we're going to keep doing this. And the crowd loved that. But yeah, this was, I thought it was, like I said, it was perfect. To your point, it would have been foolish about like five stars and whatever. And like,
yeah,
you know, people hear star ratings, they think of a certain style match.
Yeah.
You know, that gets high star ratings. This would have been foolish to try to do that. That kind of match. This was, you want to put Wardlow over strong. And what interests me moving forward here, I know everyone's going to be talking about MJF's future in the promotion, but what about Wardlow?
Yes.
Now that he is,
that was going to be my next question.
He's unchained from MJF, and this can go a couple different ways. Sometimes, you know, when you've got the baby face that breaks away from, you know, the guy who is mistreating him, it's great. And sometimes the heat's gone.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think it would be horrible of me to compare Wardlow to like Virgil. You know, that's not fair. But like, right? Like, as soon as Virgil stopped being with Teddy DiBiase, I was like, all right, you stink. Like,
okay, no. here's something. Here's what I always think.
The one that I would compare him to.
But here's the other thing that I always think about when it comes to something like this. Now, the odds and the stakes weren't as high for this match, but you remember when Shawn Michaels beat Bret Hart for the title at WrestleMania 12. Mm-hmm. Bret was taking time off, and Bret, on leaving, basically said, okay, now we'll see how you do without me, kind of thing, right? That was kind of his thing. And I sort of wonder how Wardlow will do without MJF, because the reason why this was so successful is, I don't know if it's 50-50 or 60-40, but MJF is a giant part of this. And so now you have this Goldberg-like character, and now we see what's next. And I'm very interested to see what's next. This is it's not 100% that this guy stays over as he was over going into this match. I mean, it's not a given. They have work to do.
No, I mean, you have to come up with something that is interesting. I mean, this is a real, you know, high end take here. You have to come up with something that's interesting for moving forward. You know, I think just him squashing random people every week that, you know, aren't MJF may get old, but we shall see. I don't know. I mean, I think the TNT title's out there for him if they want to do that. I don't know if Tony would want a wrestler like that who does short matches as his TNT champion. I've always liked Dave's idea about Bryan Danielson, right, personally. But, you know, you talked about Sean Brett earlier at WrestleMania 12. I think what makes this dynamic different than that one, let's not kid ourselves, Brett wanted Sean to fail in 1996.
Sure.
Like, he left because he, like, you know, I don't think MJF, no matter what his standing is with AEW right now, wants Wardlow to fail. Maybe he does. I don't know. But that would surprise me a little bit because, I mean, he was a total pro, you know, to my earlier point about, oh, I feel so bad for Wardlow if this guy would no-show the pay-per-view. He showed up and did exactly what he needed to do.
Took 10 friggin' power bombs. Yeah. Jeez.
The comparison that I make, and I kind of tried to blurt it out there, was Batista. Because Batista, when they had him turn on Triple H, you know, that was like so good.
Yep.
And they did, what, 3 matches on pay-per-view, including Mania. The third one that was in the cell was great. And then Batista got traded to SmackDown not long after, and he sort of floundered. That, like, his peak was the Triple H feud. He never got to that height again. Now, part of that was they clearly swapped him and Cena in the pecking order in that draft. We shall see.
And I think he finally sort of figured out how to be a heel right as he was on his way out. Like, that was some of the best Batista was right before he left.
Yeah, like, as a baby face from, you know, the SmackDown locker room didn't like him. I think that was, like, remember he got into that fight with Booker T?
Yeah.
Doing a commercial or something. You're right.
He got very big, very fast.
Yeah, but you're right. His best work post that feud with Triple H that I mentioned was at the end when he was a heel. Yeah, for sure. And Wardlow should not turn heel. Make no mistake about it.
And then, you know, one of the commenters thinks that Wardlow's the reason for it. And I don't know if you can do Bill Goldberg in 2022, because I don't imagine that Bill Goldberg version of Wardlow is in the sort of the plans of where things are going. But I'm this is not to say that Wardlow is not a big part of this either. I just worry about it a little bit.
No, I mean, at the same time, if you want to be optimistic, you could make a case that other than CM Punk, he's the top babyface on the roster right now.
Yeah.
And he's probably feeling good, but I'm very interested to see what direction they go with him. And they should give him War Pigs as a theme, by the way. Because now that he's a contracted wrestler, that would be nice. Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk. We'll go through some of these matches a little bit more quickly because I do want to get to the championship, the world title. So the Hardys defeated the Young Bucks in almost 20 minutes. This match was longer than I thought it was.
Yeah.
There was some rough stuff early on. I thought Jeff just looked like somebody who was not feeling very well.
Well, Dave reported this morning that he was really banged up coming out of that Darby Allin match, right? Yeah. Which does not surprise me, having seen the Darby Allin match in question.
And he's off Dynamite. He was going to be in the 10-man tag at Dynamite. He's off that match. So this match, I think, because of the fact that both Hardys are in their overprime, as Matt, I think Matt called it the overprime. I give so much credit to the Young Bucks for making this match what it was. There were some, you know, there were some Attitude Era fans in there because they sort of willed the Hardys in this match. They desperately did not want to see the Hardys be bad, and they were getting fired up for everything Hardys. I thought it was really cool to see. And the Young Bucks, you know, but the Young Bucks deserve all the credit in the world for this match being as good as it was. And I'm not saying it was a classic in any way, but it was a fun match, I thought.
Yeah, I thought it was a carry job by the Bucks. I don't know.
Yeah,
am I allowed to say that on this platform? I don't want to offend anyone.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I thought you're right. The Bucks totally were leading throughout. What did you think about the crowd in the building? It was an odd crowd. There were some characters around us. It was, I'm going to watch my language here, but like, it was not like the most hardcore AEW fan base. Like, when you think of AEW fan, the people that were, and it was not people I knew from your guys' group, it was just like randoms that were around us. But there was a guy behind us in the Anarchy in the Arena match. He's like, oh, are Inner Circle still together? Is that still going on? Who's on whose team? I'm looking back. I'm like, do you watch the TV, pal?
Do you think that's good or bad thing? Because that guy is somebody who maybe is not following and he still came to the show.
No, that's good. Obviously, yeah. Because it, you know, I know there's so much debate about, is there a casual fan? What is a casual fan in 2022? And if someone is in the building at a pay-per-view opining, oh, is the Inner Circle still together? That sounds like a casual fan to me, or somebody who's not very good at watching television. I don't know.
I thought the crowd at times was like one of the greatest wrestling crowds of all time, because there were moments in that show where if you have a different crowd, there's a lot of life that goes out of that show, and they were up when they needed to be up, including at the end of that Thunder Rosa Serena Deeb match. For the main event, you know, after we'd been there for 4 hours already, they were rising to the occasion. Sometimes, especially in a town like Vegas, you can get the opposite, which is everyone's been partying all weekend and you get to that show and you're tired and you're grouchy and, you know, you're trying to, you know, you're frustrated because you had to pay $23 for a Jack and Coke.
Yeah.
And it could be the wrong crowd, right? But I thought they were really, really good in the times when they needed to be.
Well, what was great from my perspective, someone who lives in the Eastern time zone, I realized, like, I don't know, I didn't really think too much about it, but then I was like, oh man, this show's going to start at 4:30 local time. That's awesome. And I knew there was no way I was going to be tired. I actually got a fairly decent night of sleep the night before. So it was great. I was pretty confident I was going to be tired. To your point about the crowd and its energy throughout the show, I think really with the exception of Darby and Kyle O'Reilly, they were there throughout. To all the people saying, oh, the show's too long. Oh, it had too many matches. Look, you're deeper in the weeds than this than I am. I haven't seen anyone with the take, oh, you know, it would have been great for Double or Nothing as a 14th match. No one said that, and there shouldn't have been, obviously. I'm not going to – if you think there was too many matches Sunday, I'm not going to disagree with that.
No.
But
so you heard the strategy around it, though, right?
Oh, sure. And I thought that was insane because I had just done a review over Top Rope Nation of Steve Austin and Dude Love.
Yes.
And I was shocked at the buy rate for it. It was really low. It was like the lowest number they did in 98, maybe except for like No Way Out of Texas, but whatever, nobody cares. And it turns out that was against a Bulls-Pacers game 7. And I was reading stuff. Now, Dave did not want to give credit that in his Observer at the time, in the Observer at the time, hurting the buy rate. But I thought it was crazy. But about the basketball game, I kid you not, Garrett, getting another drink. And it was, I think, the Thunder Rosa Serena Deeb match.
Mm-hmm.
Guy comes up, the basketball game was ending, and I had my phone out. I was keeping track of the score. I had the under. And a guy goes to the bartender, hey, man, can you put the basketball game on?
Wow.
And I was like, what? I was like, I thought this was the silliest thing in the world to think about, that there were people in the building that were like, cared more about the basketball game. And this was just one guy.
There was
14,000 people there. This was just one. But the fact that I witnessed that just took me aback. And I was like, you know what? Maybe Tony was onto something.
Did he not have a phone? What's going on?
Yeah, maybe he just wanted to watch. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I literally had it on. I had the last couple minutes on, you know, on the ESPN app. So,
yeah. Yeah. I saw there were people in the building, like a couple rows in front of me. They had the video on their phone. So, yeah.
Let's get through this show a little bit more quickly. So then we had the Jade Cargill and Anna Jay. I made this comment that Anna Jay was reminded me of somebody on NXT 2.0. I thought she had a really bad match. Jade, I love Jade, but she still does need somebody to kind of get her through some of this stuff. Having Anna Jay in there, I thought, you know, really didn't do them any favors. But then we got Stokely Hathaway coming out. We got Athena coming out. Chris Statlander comes out and gets the biggest pop of everybody again. So they got to do something with her because there's a little bit of a momentum of her. But I liked Athena coming out. I loved Stokely. When he got fired as Malcolm Bivens from WWE, or when his contract expired and he decided not to re-up, I told Dave that night, I was like, he's got to be Jade's manager. I was like, it's so perfect. It is like the easiest thing you could do. So I was so happy to see him come out and basically replace Smart Mark. But what did you think about all of the newcomers coming in?
Yeah, I had said the same thing, actually, about Stokely Hathaway. I was like, because when you look at Jade Cargill, it's very clear this is a main event act. Does she have some things that she can work on? Yeah, but I mean, she's very young.
Yes.
I mean, the sky's the limit. I think she's the future star of the AEW women's division. And, you know, this is no disrespect to Smart Mark Sterling. I think he's good. I just don't think...
He is not a main event manager. Somebody, exactly. Somebody described it to me as he is Harvey Whippleman with Sid Vicious.
I think that was me, actually.
Oh, yeah, you're the one who said it. Yes. I was going to say,
as soon as you said that, I was like, if he says Harvey Whippleman, I think that's...
Yeah, yeah, it was perfect. It was absolutely perfect.
Yeah, so that was a good fit with Stokely. And then Athena coming out, we all kind of anticipated she would come out. It'll be interesting how she does vis-a-vis some of the other women who've come over from WWE. Because the top three women in the division right now, Thunder Rosa, Britt Baker, Jade Cargill, none of them are WWE castoffs or people from WWE. Perhaps castoffs is a cruel term. But I agree with you on Chris Statlander, too. Again, not somebody who didn't come from WWE.
Nope.
She got a big pop, dropped the alien gimmick, and people seem into her.
The look is so much better, too. I thought she looks like so much of a bigger star the way that they have her. All right, crazy match. House of Black beats the Death Triangle. I love this because this was a match that you cannot do in WWE. This is like, you could only do this in America right now on AEW to a big audience. So this match was so AEW, and then they did a WWE finish, and I was just like, I can't believe it.
It was a WWE finish. We talked about on Top Rope Nation in our review that if you do this finish in WWE, aren't we all poo-pooing it, making fun of it, saying we don't like it? But we also opined, hey, they've been teasing this Julia Hart thing since the beginning of time, and they finally paid it off. So, yeah, I like this match, too. One of my favorite Twitter follows, this guy, Tape. He had this great quote on this match when he said, five weirdo devil worshipers and Ray Phoenix being like, I love to jump. and that's what this was, basically. I like that comment you had about how you would not see a match like this in WWE. You wouldn't, yeah, because the people in charge there think that this is not the way you should work.
Right, exactly. And on a show like this, where there is so many matches, it was great to get the variety.
Yeah.
And this was A+ Phoenix, A+ Penta, because sometimes they'll do stuff on live TV and you're like, oh, that doesn't look so great because they're trying, the degree of difficulty is so high, but they were hitting all their stuff in this match.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think coming in, we knew what this match would be, and it was that. And yep, sometimes that's all we need,
yep,
especially in the middle of the card.
All right, then we had, let's see, where are we at? Owen Cup finals. So we had Adam Cole beating Samoa Joe and Britt Baker beating Ruby Soho. I thought it was a little weird to have two heels win these matches because I was less looking at it as like this coronation of this tournament, which I had my problems with the way that they did the tournament, but I wanted to see a babyface be made coming out of this. You know, I wanted to see like a babyface, like, oh, you know, it wouldn't have been, Samoa Joe wouldn't have been the right one because he had that, that he's already got that ROH title. So I kind of figured, okay, Adam Cole's winning this match. I think most people did. Mm-hmm. But I would have loved to see Ruby Soho win this match because Britt's already over like crazy. Like Britt doesn't need it, but I'm sure they wanted the thing with the couple. I thought as cool as it was to see Martha Hart, you know, if there was anything that went a little long, it might have been Martha Hart's speech. But the sort of the pageantry of it all, I know a lot of people who really liked it. When I knew sort of what we were going up against when it came to time, I was like, okay, can we get through this? Let's get through this. But there are a lot of people that loved it. And so I can't say that it was negative in any way.
Well, I think the biggest positive of this entire Owen tournament was just having the name Owen Hart back on wrestling television. As far as how the tournaments played out, I think you could make a case that doing two concurrent tournaments on television hurts the overall build of the pay-per-view. I didn't see that point enough when people, because basically to set up the other matches that aren't the two finals, you have to wait till everyone loses.
Yeah.
In the tournament to start setting up their pay-per-view program. I also thought Ruby was going to win on the women's side. I assumed Cole was going to win. You talk about WWE style booking here. You have got Adam Cole winning. You know, what are you strengthening him for? He's coming off two world title losses to Paige, and Britt Baker is the former champion. So that you could argue that these two didn't need to win, but they are big stars. And I think the argument for maybe not putting Ruby Soho over in this tournament is, 6 months down the road, where's Ruby Soho going to be realistically? Yes. And do you want to look? Do you want to look back? Because it sounds like they're doing this tournament again next year. And do you want to look back and Ruby Soho won and now look, you know, and
To accentuate your point, when they put the names on that cup, the first one says Adam Cole, the first one says Britt Baker. In 5 years, they are probably still pretty big stars.
Yeah,
and so that's how you kick off this tournament.
What do you think about Adam Cole's run in AEW so far? I know we've got a lot to talk about, but
I like him, but I know there's people who thought he was like a future world champion at NXT. I never saw it because I just didn't think Vince would push somebody that small. Now, the act is great. He's a great talker. But I think similarly to, you know, other folks there's going to be a time where you kind of need to cool people down. And so I think when this Kenny Omega thing actually comes back, then I think he's going to be heated up again, because now we have the Undisputed Elite with the Elite. And that when that whole thing breaks down, I think Adam Cole will be on fire at that moment.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think because we don't know precisely what Kenny Omega status is, kind of a fluid situation with Adam Cole. But I made the point in a review that, you know, AEW is a promotion where every week, every pay-per-view, you get standout performances. And Adam Cole just hasn't had a lot of them, I feel, so far.
You know, that match with Paige, I thought that match was awesome.
Okay. All right, I mean, it was the pay-per-view one or the second one? Okay.
The pay-per-view one.
It was good, but I just feel like, okay, that happened in the shadow of Punk MJF. And again, you shouldn't just shouldn't be graded against the best match.
Sure.
I just think consistently, I watch a lot of Adam Cole and I see a lot of, it was okay.
Well, I think he's a good wrestler, really good wrestler. I don't think he's a great wrestler, but I think he's got a more of an overall package that sort of accentuates him. But yeah, I mean, in ring, I think he's pretty good, but I wouldn't consider him one of the greatest in that company. And look, that's a high bar, right? And
so
Jason Jimerson in the chat said, if Kenny Omega comes back, if Kenny Omega doesn't come back, oh my God, that would be terrible.
Because I think they're certainly counting on him to, you know, at some point to be a pay-per-view headliner again. Yeah, that would be terrible, especially with this MJF situation being what it is. You don't want to lose two potential pay-per-view main event guys.
All right. If there was a match where I would say I agree with folks that something could have been moved off of this show, and maybe it's probably even better on Dynamite, it's this Scorpio Sky, Ethan Page, and Paige Van Zandt versus Sammy Guevara, Frankie Kazarian, and Ty Conti. I was fine with this match. It was exactly, you know, what you expected, craziness, the stuff with Sammy and Ty where he super kicks her. You know, just, again, it would have been a perfect Dynamite match. And so if you tell me this match shouldn't have been on the show, I would have been like, okay, I get it. I totally get it. I think maybe I am a little bit higher than some on Scorpio Sky. I just think he's somebody that they need to move on and really push hard, because I think he may not be the total package himself, but I can see him getting better time and time again. And I think they need to reward that, because he is getting over. He is doing a really good job, and I want to see him continue to excel. And look, it's a crowded field, but for that reason, I liked this match on the pay-per-view because of him. And I hope that they continue to do more with him.
I think the argument is, again, you have a promotion full of standouts on a weekly basis. Should he be the TNT champion? That's obviously a high-profile spot. I'll leave the listeners to debate that themselves. The problem with this match was the dynamic was all messed up. The only person that you could cheer for was Frankie Kazarian. And, you know, he's not hunting elites anymore. I don't know what he's doing. And it was weird how he, you know, told off Ty and Sammy, which was a good spot, and people popped for it. But then the match kept going. Yeah. Like, you know, the other, you know, men of the year and Paige just jumped him and they beat him down. I'm like, all right, let's take this home. But then, like, Frankie got back in the match and was trying to win. I was very confused at that point. So it was an odd dynamic. It's especially, you know, in the middle of a long pay-per-view.
All right, we're going to run out of time. We only have 2.5 minutes left.
I knew that.
So the matches we didn't get to talk about were the Anarchy in the Arena match. Oh, no, sorry. Kyle O'Reilly beat Darby Allin. That was a good match. They didn't have the time for it to be great. Thunder Rosa beat Serena Deeb. I thought that they did a very good job there. Anarchy in the Arena was just chaos, and I need to watch this thing back on this on the TV version because we missed so much being there live. I'm going to circle back to that in a second. Roosh is coming to AEW. We'll see what they do there. And then we had the tag team title match, which I really, really enjoyed.
A lot of great near falls.
And then Adam Page loses to CM Punk in story-wise, great match. In the ring, pretty darn good. There was some struggle there at some point, but overall, I'm just kind of bummed because I wanted to talk to you a little bit more about that match. But what I wanted to save time for is most people know that through the pandemic, I did a bunch of podcasts with Jon Moxley because he just wanted to talk MMA. Like, he's like, you do an MMA podcast. I want to come on. I was like, great. So as the Anarchy in the Arena match starts to come out, we hear that there's going to be those guys coming down our aisle. Now, I didn't know exactly if it's going to be our aisle, but at All Out, he came right down my aisle as well. So I kind of got the phone situated because I wanted to get if he was coming down our aisle, I kind of wanted to get the right video of his entrance. He literally stops right next to me and puts his foot on the chair in front of me. And I reached out to him in email the next day, just, you know, tell him, you know, gosh, that was such a crazy match and whatever. But I said, do you know that you stopped like right next to me? And he was like, holy S, what are the odds? Because, you know, it's like right there. I wasn't going to like tap him on the leg or anything because that dude gets in a zone, you know, you don't want to disturb that.
He does. So I saw him getting ready in that Bud Light Lounge because, you know, again, I saw him there and yeah, he was all keeping to himself.
All right, Kyle, thanks for doing this. We're flat out of time. I could have done this with you for another hour and a half. No problem. But check out Kyle on Top Rope Nation podcast. Quickly give your Twitter handle for the folks.
It is @TRPKyle.
All right.
Ironically enough.
Great. We're going to get your partner, Ryan Drosty, on this show. I would love to have you on again, do more stuff down the line. But check out Kyle. Check out Top Rope Nation. And yeah, we'll get out of here. So for Kyle, I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.